one thing we noticed is we kind of built a lot of technology that automated a lot of stuff, but sometimes you have simple questions that you cannot answer using our products. So you have to hire a data analyst or data scientist. And we came up with the idea of creating an engine that can help you to talk to your data. Right. Similarly, like you talk to ChatGPT right now, you can talk to your data. And that's how we created Ananya.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the EVN Disrupt podcast. My name is Nijdat Zatharyan. I'm the editor of the creative tech section here at EVN Report. Our guest this week was Hrant Daftyan, founder and CEO of Metric and Pinsight. He joined us to discuss how his company is building open source LLMs that are able to conduct analytics and extract insights from documents. Pinsight's product, Ananya, allows users to speak directly with their data, asking questions such as how much revenue the company generated last month, or when the last time a certain customer placed an order was. Hrant also shared with us the journey of finding a product that can gain market traction in the era of generative AI, and his thoughts on what ideas are worth pursuing in the AI space. Thank you for listening. Hrant, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you too for inviting me, Nijdat.
Let's start with a little bit of your background. Tell me how you got into the world of tech and then why you decided to start a company.
Okay, so the story is actually quite long, so let me start from the early beginnings. I'm an economist by my education, and in economics, there is an area called econometrics, which is kind of data science in economics. So my full focus has been always econometrics inside economics. So when I started doing econometrics, I started automatically learning data science on the side. I had my job at the American University of Armenia. I was teaching econometrics and similar courses there, and I also had some consulting opportunities as an economist and econometrician in the industry. So when I was learning data science, I started to look for more and more consulting opportunities in data science. And that's how I became kind of a data science consultant. Over time, I was consulting different tech companies, healthcare companies, government, UN agencies, etc., on data science topics. And at some point, I had 9 different consulting projects, which kind of felt the limit. So I sat down and thought, what should I do to scale this? So the solution was to start a consulting firm. And I started my first firm called Metric, which basically started providing consulting services to companies. None of them local. So kind of I converted my consulting clients that were individual customers to company customers in the beginning. And that's how we scaled it.
Mm-hmm. And you started hiring people to...
Yeah, I started hiring because I was at the university. I had some research projects and I had research assistants.
Students.
Basically, they were the first hires that joined me. And then because I was teaching at the university, again, I kind of picked the best students in the class and took them for the internship program and helped them to grow as professional. And over time, they became a very important part of the team who are seniors and leads in our company or elsewhere right now.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know you had an economics background. Was your research at the university in economics or in data science or in like in a computer science related field?
It was kind of in the middle. Okay. So using one to solve problems in the other.
Okay.
So stuff like data analytics, data science, statistics for industries such as finance, taxation, etc. So.
Do you see in the social sciences, which economics is a part of, do we have a strong core of students and young researchers that are well-versed in data practices and data science? Because ultimately, like, data science is a fancy way of saying a lot of the work that, like you mentioned, people in economics and other fields had already been doing for a long time. Is there that analytic and quantitative skill set in Armenia for the social sciences?
There are some, yes, there are some. So specifically, I can speak about economics. So at AUA, American University of Armenia, at some point, we opened the data analytics track, the economics master's program. So right now we have people who are, for example, department heads of data science departments at commercial banks in Armenia who are graduates of the economics program at AUA. We have startup founders who are running an AI startup and have been graduate of economics program. So they are kind of the people who know the economics side and also could get the data analytics education at the university and then continue with more dedicated data analytics program in the future.
Yeah. And are there opportunities for them to stay in the social sciences fields or does tech attract too many of them away?
Unfortunately, no. There's not enough opportunities. So basically, if you want to be a competitive economist in Armenia, if you don't want to go to academia, then you either have to work at the government or central bank. So there are not many opportunities. It's like, it's not like we have Amazon who is hiring economists in Armenia. Yeah. So the private sector is not really hiring economists.
Or a lot of think tanks or something. Yeah. Yeah, that's a problem that we definitely need to tackle, but it's probably outside of the scope of our show today. Okay, so you started your consulting firm Metric, which is still around today.
Yeah, still around.
And it's still something you're involved in directly, or?
Actually, I stopped being involved when I started my startups, but kind of starting from last year, I started to dedicate some time back to mm-hmm. the consulting firm, mostly because of the economic situation. You know, the market conditions were not good in general and especially in Armenia. So I needed to kind of spare more time on consulting firm as well to make sure it's scaling and growing.
So tell us about your second venture, Pinsight.
Yeah, so at the consulting company, we kind of saw that we have already several projects on the same directions that we have kind of code that is repetitive and being used for one and the other, and we decided to build a product on top of it. The idea in nowadays term was to create a foundation model for tabular data. So not foundation model for text, such as ChatGPT, but foundation model for business data, like marketing data, sales data, etc. And that's how we started Pinsight. That's why in the beginning we were calling it Double Learn, so tabular mm-hmm. data and machine learning. And because it was getting mixed a lot with Tableau, we started calling it Pinsight, so predictions and insights instead. So that's how we started Pinsight, and then we went on and did tons of pivots afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's a completely different company right now.
I'm really curious about that journey. Tell me about the pivots, like tell me the story of how you guys got to the product you are today.
Yeah, of course. So when we started Pinsight, as I mentioned, we had some companies that were consulting company customers. So we kind of converted them to product customers and started selling SaaS. And we started shipping off features that customers were requesting us for. And one feature that we actually noticed that we are missing in Pinsight, basically it was a tool that helped you to make predictions for your business data, like understand whom to target with marketing campaigns, which are the customers that soon gonna churn, et cetera, what are your revenue forecasts, and so on and so far. And one thing we noticed is we kind of built a lot of technology that automated a lot of stuff, but sometimes you have simple questions that you cannot answer using our product. So you have to hire a data analyst or data scientist. And we came up with the idea of creating an engine that can help you to talk to your data. Right. Similarly, like you talk to ChatGPT right now, you can talk to your data. When we came up with this idea, we sat down and tried to POC the feature, and for some reason it came out to be actually a bigger thing than mm-hmm. the whole product itself. So we decided to stop development of the main product and focus on that feature instead. And we called that feature Ananya, and that's how we kind of spun off the second product and stopped working on Pinsight at that point of time. Mm-hmm. And that's how we created Ananya.
Ananya does what exactly?
So Ananya is basically a product that, again, you connect your data.
Okay.
And you can ask any question that comes to your mind in plain English about your data.
About your data, right.
It's going to analyze your data and answer your questions. So right. It's like much more flexible than the initial version of the product, Pinsight, was, because it was only for specific use cases like predicting, churn, etc., as I mentioned. For Ananya, you can ask any question that comes to your mind, including calculate average.
So like I have all my data given to Ananya on like customer sales, mm-hmm. Profit margin for my different products, things like that. And I can say for customer A, how much sales was there in Q3 of 2022, for example, and it'll calculate and tell me.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to calculate and provide you tables, charts, reports, etc.
Is the model underneath one of the LLM providers, or is it a custom model that you guys have built?
So it's funny. So we started much sooner than ChatGPT.
What year, by the way? What year?
It was 1 year before ChatGPT. Okay. I don't remember which year. 2022.
2022.
Yeah, 2022. So we had the idea to kind of focus on Ananya on February 1st of 2022. And we came up with this idea of to build in public. Mm-hmm. And we set up a goal in front of us. If we can get at least one paying customer in a month, which is 28 days in February, then we are focusing on Ananya. If not, then we continue building Pinsight. So we went on Product Hunt on the 16th day. We got around 200 subscribers.
Wow.
And
paying subscribers?
No. Okay. Free users, because we didn't have any payment system even integrated. Yeah. So on the February 28th, the last day of the month, one person purchased subscription of Ananya, and we still had the users that we actually gained from Product Hunt. So
nice.
that was kind of nice validation from the market. And at that point of time, we were experimenting with different models, and there was no ChatGPT, so we had our own models as well as some open source models that have been used behind Ananya.
Mm-hmm. And to this day, it's still a mixture?
We actually have our own models, but right now, if you go and use the free version that is available for public, it is using GPT 3.5 in behind.
Okay.
Just because it's cheaper and it's easier to use. But we
and
still
it's good
have
enough for
models.
The, yeah, the tasks at hand.
Yeah, it's good enough for free version just to convert the leads. And we have our own models that kind of are serving the mid-enterprise customers.
Mm-hmm. What's the benefit of having your own models in the background for those tasks instead of using a model provider?
Yeah, typically there are three reasons that you may consider using non-OpenAI models
or one of the LLM providers.
Is, coming from the LLM providers. So number one reason is privacy. Many companies don't want OpenAI to have access to their data. So if you have your custom model, you are able to provide on-premises deployment on their own servers so that the data doesn't leave the server, which is something that we provide and OpenAI doesn't. Surely they cannot host the whole
of
big
course,
GPT.
Yeah.
number two reason is cost. So many times GPT can be very costly if you have high frequency usage. And the number three reasons that you may prefer open source model is quality, not open source model, like another provider, or open source model, is the quality. So GPT is very good at the general stuff, but when it comes to specific narrow use cases, it cannot be a winner in all of them, right? Mm-hmm. So when it comes to data analytics specifically, GPT is not the best one in the market, unfortunately, So we have the opportunity to actually... find kind of a product market fit for us in there.
Interesting. And is there an some open source foundational model that you guys take and fine tune to get your end model, or are you guys pre-training from scratch?
No, we actually took open source foundation models. It changes a lot because we have new open source foundation models coming up every day, but we basically have our own proprietary data coming from different sources, including synthetic data that we generated. And we take the open source foundation models and fine tune on them.
Out of curiosity, if you can say, which open source model is the best for data analysis and tabular data?
Well, it's difficult to say which one is actually the best one because we fine tune and then we improve the model on top of it. So the ones that we used were Mistral, because that's kind of the top one generally among open source, Llama, obviously. And the other one, WizardLM.
Yeah, interesting. You said you guys generate synthetic data for the fine tuning. Tell me a little bit about that process. Like, what exactly are you guys generating?
So basically, what Ananya is doing in behind, when you ask a question, your question that is asked in plain English is being converted to code, which is SQL or Python. So we have to generate more of text to SQL or text to Python data pairs. Let's focus on SQL. So if you take, let's say, GPT-4 and generate data, it may provide, let's say, 10 SQLs, and four of them may be wrong, six of them might be correct. So what we took when we have synthetic data, what we do, we take the data and execute it on databases. And first of all, filter out the ones that are not executable. The ones that are executable and give results, we take them and we feed them into another LLM and we ask whether it's correct or false.
Right.
If LLM says it's wrong, then we remove this one and leave only the ones that are correct. So we kind of repeat this process, or filtering process, as many times as needed to get kind of the best results only. And then there is an approach called Eval Instruct that basically helps you to use evaluation theory and improve the quality of your dataset. We use Eval Instruct to improve the dataset. Basically, we give the SQL and say, make this harder. That's the idea.
Right.
As much as needed to get like hard text and SQL or text to Python pairs.
Do you guys also have a way of generating samples that are anomalous to your model?
We actually do that, yes, but we don't do that for fine-tuning. There is another method called preference alignment or preference optimization, which helps you to not to teach knowledge to the model, but actually help the model to navigate in the correct direction. So we generate data for alignment, and that's done not using any LLM at all. So basically what we do, we take two questions that are very similar to each other, but are actually different questions, and we mix the SQL pairs in front of them, and we say, hey, this is wrong. The correct one is actually the one that we had in the beginning. So the we put the correct SQL in front and the very similar but actually wrong SQL in front of it so that it can learn the small and unexpected differences between question SQL pairs as well.
I see. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How have you guys found the traction to be with Anya?
How we found the traction? We actually used a lot of the product and et cetera stuff that others are doing as well. We used our consulting from customers to kind of upsell on Anya.
It's a natural customer base.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we also use the our network to get recommendations. Like mm-hmm. We ask our customers, because it's very user-facing feature. So mm-hmm. basically, if you're talking to a B2B company, their customers are businesses as well. Right. So we kind of have this chain reaction when the customers of our customers actually need our tool as well. But when ChatGPT was announced, it turned out to be actually quite easy to build products like Anya. So when we started, there were actually 7 products only available that were doing what we were doing. And we were the only one in the market. The other 6 were acquired. Hmm. One by ServiceNow, another one by Alteryx, and so on. So all by giants, Salesforce, etc. And we were the only one in the market at the point of time. Now, if you Google search stuff like TalkToGPT, etc., you can find tons of products doing that. And most of them are GPT wrappers. Mm-hmm. It's really, really hard to actually pitch among many other products, like why customers should choose yours. So we're actually working on Pivot right now as well.
To what?
So basically, we sat down with the team and started discussing what's our advantage and why people are using or should use our product. It's quality. It's the fact that it is available to be deployed on your own servers. And the idea we came with for our pivot was let's go on and open source. So basically, we are planning to open source the model that we have behind Anya. And because we thought that we're going to open source the model, then we decided to open source some other models that we had. Mm-hmm. So we are kind of trying to convert into an open source company. And that way, we will still have our same customers that we have right now, but we believe it will be much easier to pitch quality because that's what we are pitching, like security and quality, that we are better than GPT and you can deploy it on your own servers. So having open source model basically is easier to pitch because there are tons of leaderboards that you can compare, you can publish a paper and pitch in conferences, etc., and show that your model is better. So that's one thing that we are actually experimenting right now.
So it's a way of getting your message out better.
Exactly, and getting credibility.
Getting credibility, yeah. Mm-hmm. But how would it help from a perspective of translating to paying customers?
Yeah, so our customers are typically firms that don't have the AI team.
Right.
So those are companies that don't have any AI teams. So for the open source model, the end user are machine learning engineers. So the companies that basically don't have AI teams can see the credibility, but still mm-hmm. they need someone to deploy it, right? So we provide kind of the managed version of our model in our cloud.
It's like a professional services thing, yeah.
Not professional services, like managed services. So we have the managed cloud. It's like if OpenAI was open source, people would go and pay for ChatGPT to use it, right? Because not everybody can take a big model and deploy it on cloud.
Yeah, you pay for the convenience of it.
Exactly. Right?
Yeah. In terms of like where your application sits, currently it sits on your platform, mm-hmm. right? So if I want to use it, I can go register on your website and use it there. Do you think there's a more natural place for it to sit? Like, for example, I've done a lot of work on ERPs, for example, and I'm surprised that the big ones haven't yet integrated something like your system directly as the main interface. Like if I go into SAP or if I go into a Sage system or something, why isn't there, all my data is there. Like, why can't I talk to it there? Do you think that's a more natural place for applications like yours to sit, or do you think it should be separate?
Absolutely. So when we came up with potential ideas for integration in the beginning for Anya, we listed down 3 different integration partner profiles. The first one was the BI tools, and we didn't focus on them because we understood that the major players are going to have their own system mm-hmm. and they wouldn't like to third party. And we were correct. Like Microsoft is integrating ChatGPT with Power BI.
Yeah.
Amazon has its own queue, etc. Second one was CRM systems, mm-hmm. We focused on Salesforce and HubSpot. But when I mentioned that we had 7 companies in the market, ourselves and six other competitors. So one of those competitors were acquired by Salesforce. And right now they're actually integrating it. So soon, maybe they already have it, I don't know. Soon they will have the, not the beta, but already public version of the model. Yeah. And out of the other five, one was acquired by SAP.
Okay.
Yeah. So SAP is going to have the system as well. The main problem is those products were not actually good enough.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, the one acquired by SAP, they started the company in 2014 or so. So the technology was not there. It's really hard to be flexible enough to change the whole product around the new technology. And that's why their quality is not good enough. I think that's the main reason why they haven't announced it yet. So there's still a market opportunity for companies to integrate with SAP, etc. But we don't see that opportunity because we believe that's actually temporary. I mean, if you even integrate our product with SAP, they have the internal team working on that. Mm-hmm. And at some point, they will just release their own and get rid of us.
Have you looked at Odoo?
No.
Odoo is like an open source CRP.
Yeah.
And it's like growing really well in popularity. And I have an Odoo project right now. So if you do it, we can talk.
I know there was a company in Armenia that was doing professional consulting on,
for Odoo. Yeah. There's a couple now, I think. Yeah. Yeah.
But we haven't looked at it at all for integration purposes.
Yeah. I just brought it up because it's an easy entry point because it's open source. It has a marketplace for applications like yours and stuff. Okay. That's really interesting. As you were explaining the acquisitions, but then the need to pivot, the explaining of the idea that this isn't just a GPT-4 wrapper, et cetera, it seems like because of how insanely competitive all of these AI application spaces are now, like speaking to your data, like speaking to your PDFs was a very popular one over the last year. It just seems like such an unbelievably stressful competition to enter. How do you think about like the defensibility of your product? Like you have a model that you compare to the existing models in the market, but you constantly have to be thinking like, you know, 6 months from today, what the landscape of the models will look like. And the rate of model improvement by the major LLM providers is so fast, and the deployment cycles are so quick. How do you think about how to make sure that 18 months from now your model is still relevant?
That's actually a great, great question. So one thing that we are doing with the team all the time is asking ourselves the question, is what we are doing basically currently being researched, experimented, or somehow else being tested by the major providers? First of all, OpenAI, obviously. But also by the others. Like we always ask the question, hey, what will happen when GPT-5 is released? What about GPT-6? So,
or Cohere that focuses on enterprise, which is much more relevant to what you're doing.
Exactly. So are they going to have much better analytical capabilities? Why yes or why no? So yeah, that's obvious question that we're asking ourselves all the time. So one thing that we kind of feel is that no product is defensible in the market, unfortunately. But at the same time, we see opportunity being a technology company. Like probably, you know, one of the main comments to founders like myself, they always say, hey, technology is not important. Focus on
it's product, about the business. Yeah.
But I think many companies have proven it wrong recently. Like if you know, Mosaic ML, for example, got acquired by Databricks, etc. There are many examples like this. And as a result, it seems like if your technology is really cutting edge and if it has its own competitive advantage, then there is a place for the technology companies in the market, the ones that actually serve technology as a product, not the interface.
Just the experience. Yeah.
So that's exactly one of the reasons why we are open sourcing, because we see that whatever happens, the two open source model that we're going to announce soon will stay competitive with at least GPT-5 release. We are not sure about GPT-6, but they will still be competitive with GPT-5 release. Still enough time to actually work on improve when GPT-6 comes out.
But the examples that you brought up are extremely capital intensive, right? How do you think about that?
Well, not extremely, but yes, capital intensive. So fortunately,
at least like hundreds of thousands.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we are not really training models from the very scratch. I mean, you have to have millions or maybe billions if you really want to be competitive in the market. But yeah, we have a lot of cloud spend. And the most of the money is actually spent on experimentation, not really on the final model.
That's true.
Well, I don't know. I mean, we basically have some customers that are willing to pay for the customization of the model that is also resulting in learning from us. So kind of naturally are compensating some of the experiment costs through that. But
yeah. The other thing to point out is like on the positive side is at the end of the day, serving a great user experience is still an extremely valuable thing to customers, right? So like you even if there is it comes a point where it's extremely difficult or impossible to keep up on the technology side, there are great businesses that can be built around just serving a better experience than what OpenAI does with ChatGPT for like a niche, right? Like one of the examples that I really liked was Instagram is an AWS wrapper, and like it's kind of true. Like there's nothing, if you think about like version one of Instagram, there's nothing like terribly proprietary about it, right? And it was a pretty simple product. Technologically, it was difficult to scale, and then the AWS's of the world fixed the scaling problem. And then you just had a great application experience that enough users enjoyed that it turned into a great business, right? That got purchased for $1 billion. If you look at Devin, which was an AI software engineer that a software engineer that is an AI, I should say, that was announced maybe a month ago at this point. As far as we know, is a wrapper. And it's gained like incredible notoriety and it's raised a lot of capital and stuff. Copy AI is a wrapper, et cetera, et cetera. So there is something to be said about just delivering a great product experience. Like for AI entrepreneurs, it is in some ways okay to work with other people's tech as well and to just deliver a great product, I guess. So there's always room in the market for that. But then if you have your tech, that's even better, right? So
My position on this topic is actually pretty clear. So I don't believe in these products.
You don't believe in the wrapper products?
No, I don't. Yeah. And I don't understand why many people are doing so. I mean, you mentioned about chat PDF. I mean, we have...
There's like a million of them.
Yeah, we have PDF in Ananya. Do you know what happened when ChatGPT was announced? We removed that feature. So right. When we removed the chat PDF feature, tons of other companies started to work on that. I mean, why are you doing so? I mean, this is a short-term traction that certainly going to earn you some money in the short term, but you're not going to become a billion-dollar company, certainly.
It's very difficult to imagine it, yeah.
So basically, what we believe in is that, there are two things. Number one, it's what you have as a company is your strength. So when you go back to the business 101, business canvassing, et cetera, and you kind of do list down your strength areas and your weaknesses, et cetera, we are not a company that can actually scale whoppers. Okay, yeah. So we don't have the marketing team. We don't have, I don't know, sales team, et cetera, all the necessary resources that can, or I don't know, we are not the best product designers that give the best experience. What we are strong at and what we can be competitive at is technology. Mm-hmm. We are able to create technology that is competing with the best ones in the world and winning the competition. Like for comparison, one of our models where GPT-4 is providing 52% accuracy, our model is 87% accuracy. Wow. So that's a huge difference. But we cannot create the best user interface. What we are doing, we are copying interface from, I don't know, the other providers, and we are learning from
even the best designers copy, so it's, I think it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, so if even wrapper business model is a good one, that's certainly not for us. That's the first thing. But we don't believe in that model. I mean, that's a short-term model, and we also don't believe that raising funds is anyhow success measure. So many startups raise funds and then close down. So the KPI is the real business traction, and we don't really see a long-term traction. And the companies that you mentioned, I don't believe in the survival of many of them. Like, I believe they just come and go off the time. And,
really?
The one, I forgot the name, Delwin? Was that Delwin?
Devin?
Devin?
The
yeah,
software
the AI software engineer. Yeah, I mean...
there's already an open source version of it, by the way.
Of course. And you know what will happen next? We will have AI software engineer inside VS Code, inside GitHub. I don't know. So
inside GPT-7.
Exactly. So these big guys who have the distribution, they will win the competition, because in the end, distribution channels are very important. So one of the reasons we are actually open sourcing is because we don't have our own distribution channels. We don't have, I don't know, Microsoft 365 Enterprise, etc. To distribute. But with open source, you can actually easily build community if your model is good and if you kind of get the support of the open source community. So that's another distribution channel, right? So one way to think of it is, if you are really open source wrapper, then you really have to think whether you have the distribution channel to win the competition when the giants will be playing at. And for the comments that you mentioned, for majority of them, I don't believe they are actually competitive in terms of distribution channels compared to Microsoft, for example.
Or the other giants.
Yeah, yeah. Or the other giants, yes.
Mm. Yeah. Intuitively, I completely agree with you. Mm. It just, some days though, it feels like there's so much smart money going behind like what we call wrapper companies that they're, like either all that money's going to vanish, which is possible, or at the end of the day, the product experience will beat the tech. I don't know. But I totally understand. I would not want to be a wrapper company. Because like, I think if you're a wrapper company, you're constantly, you're not even in the business of like serving whatever product you're building. You're in the business of predicting what OpenAI is going to release in the next cycle. And you don't know when the next cycle is.
Exactly.
And that just sounds like hell.
I would not want to be a wrapper. I mean, and when you mentioned about smart money going in this company, I mean, there were a lot of smart money going into Pet.com and similar companies during the dot-com crash. So,
or crypto.
Yeah, or crypto, yeah. NFTs.
Yeah.
So you never know.
Yeah, that's. I think this is like one of the most interesting like conversations, and we've had it a number of times now on the show with a bunch of other entrepreneurs, some of them who are building in the wrapper space. And I just, I'm really curious to see in 10 years, which side comes out ahead, but intuitively I agree with you. Let's talk about the future of the company. Actually, before we get to that, what's your team like in Armenia now?
We're pretty small. We have 13 people in the consulting business, and we have 4 people in product development.
And are they sort of intertwined or?
Yeah, they are in the same, working from the same room.
Okay, and they all work together on
Yeah, well. It's one single team because the product was spin off from the consulting. And basically, if you feel that there is certain skill needed for the product company, and there's a certain skill need for the consulting, we actually kind of
trade off.
Substitute, yeah.
Yeah. Have you guys raised money?
Yeah, we raised money somewhere around 3 years ago for the pre-seed round, and we got some grants as well at the point of time. And then we were thinking about raising somewhere around 2 years ago when we just started Ananya, and we started talking to some investors, and we didn't really actively raise money. We just tried to understand the market climate, which was not good at the time. And among all the feedback that we have been receiving when we're building Ananya, reminder, it was before ChatGPT, the main feedback was chat interface is dead. And
that's funny.
Yeah. And investors didn't believe that. I mean, chat, talking to your data, that's not a thing. Turned out it is. It was just, I was not good as CEO that Sam Altman is, and we didn't have enough money as OpenAI. But in the end, we decided not to raise because we had the enterprise customers, we had, and we have a small team.
You guys have revenue.
Yeah, we have runaway. We have enough runaway, and we're kind of we don't know what we will spend if we have more money. I mean, we have the GPUs. We are spending money on GPUs. It's not like if we have more money, then we will have more GPUs and we will train models faster. So
yeah, no, that's fair. Unless you have a ton of money.
Unless we have a ton of money, yes, of course, yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, what does the roadmap look like now? How do you turn this from a company that's one or two features products into something that's offering an entire suite, like something more comprehensive, or is that even the goal?
No, that's not the goal. As I mentioned, the next step is open sourcing. So coming back, we have a bit of complicated terminology here. So we have Metric, which is kind of the services company. We have Pinside, which was the
parent,
parent company. And we have Ananya, which was the second product we launched. So we basically keep Ananya as a product. So we don't touch the brand name, but inside the parent company, Pinside, we are starting the kind of open source direction. And we are starting the two models that we call Dolma and Dolma, which are actually abbreviations, but we kind of try to make them at least meaningful abbreviations for our role. Yeah, that makes sense in Armenian. And we came up with the Dolma and Dolma names that not everybody in the team agrees with. and that's kind of our next step. So we're actively working on making sure our models are up to date and are competitive, or at least, if not the best, then among the top five. But one of them is the best one. One of them is in the top five in the market. And we are working on our paper that we plan to submit at top conferences, kind of as another measure of credibility of what we are doing. I don't know, probably we'll come up with our open source model somewhere in early summer or so.
Mm-hmm. And the paper alongside it.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on those conferences because many times, because there is a blind review, they don't allow you to open source the model because it kind of violates the blindness.
And last question, where do you hope to see everything you're doing, Metric and Pinsight in 5 years?
And when talking to different founders and VCs, I see that there's kind of there's a feeling that many VCs and many product company founders think that services is not scalable. And I disagree with that comment. And I think that services company can be very much scalable as well. I mean, there are companies that scaled Palantir, Accenture, McKinsey.
Palantir is the best one, probably. So, best example.
Oracle as well. I mean, the Oracle is a product company, but more than 50% of its revenues come from services. So we believe that services company is scalable as well. It's just the business model that is not scalable that many companies are using. So you may probably know that many of the Armenian services companies are using this so-called time and material business model. So with this business model, you're kind of reselling the time of your engineers, which obviously cannot have great margins and cannot provide enough value added for the customer and cannot provide enough revenue for your business. So the goal for the services company is actually build a scalable business model. We already achieved traction with enterprises, Fortune 100 companies, etc. And we have experimented with several business models that are much more scalable than the one I mentioned. And I wouldn't lie if I said, like, at least once every month, I'm meeting with different service company founders in Armenia and brainstorming with them and trying to understand whether we can come with the better services model or try to share some of the insights of our experiments, because I kind of think that AI is services right now. I mean, if you talk about, like, ChatPDF we mentioned, just yesterday, two companies reached out to us to create a ChatPDF for themselves because the existing solutions off the shelf are not enough for them, not work for them. So they need some customization, fine-tuning, etc. that is not enough for their business. So basically, we think that AI is in services right now. It's a great opportunity. So for the services company, the goal is actually come up with a scalable business model to be able to scale the business company without scaling the team.
But how do you do that if you're providing a service?
There is the distinction between managed services and professional services. So basically, if you look at it as an AI services company that is providing an AI engineer, then your AI engineer has 8 hours per day. Mm-hmm. And if you full-time employ himself or herself on a project, then basically you cannot, dedicate the same person on the second project and so, right? So that's kind of what stops the scale. So what we are doing, we are basically doing this managed services business model. We say that there are certain areas in services that are still services. We don't have a product, but we have process established. Because we have process established, because we have know-how, we have experience, this is something that ideally, if I just hired a team, in the ideal situation, I would spend, let's say, a year or 8 months to build similar custom solution. But because we have the experience, we have the code base, we have the know-how, and we have a bunch of stuff already packaged as a solution, we can do that under 1 or 2 months so compared to others. So basically what we do, we still provide the services, but given the know-how, process and package solution, we are actually able to charge the same money that others would charge for 8 or 10 months. So in the end, it's all about focus.
It's kind of like you have things that you can white label kind of?
Something like that. Yeah, something like that. Like imagine ChatPDF. So we don't have ChatPDF in Armenia right now. But if somebody has to build ChatPDF, we have all the code base, everything is in place. Yeah. So we are able to do that in, under 1 week of time.
Right.
So that's something that basically, and I'm not talking about prototype, right. I mean, production-ready ChatPDF. So basically focusing on certain areas that you have the better experience, that are your strengths, you have the know-how and you're kind of more competitive than others are, you're able to create more value in a shorter amount of time. That's kind of the idea of scaling business model in the services industry. But again, this is an insight that we got from experiments. We haven't been successful yet.
Right.
So
that's something we're working on.
Yeah. But I certainly would like others to experiment this as well. I mean, this is how Palantir and others did. So probably should work for us too. I don't know. Yeah. That's the kind of roadmap for the services company.
Especially when you have so many companies in Armenia that are service providers. And if you think about moving forward, a lot of them might become obsolete as AI progresses or become far too cheap to operate. It's a great pivot for them too, because otherwise they might not exist anymore.
Yeah, I mean, in the end, focus is everything. So if it is true for the product, why not for services? I mean, you focus on certain directions that you have most experience with, you can create more value added, you can charge more.
For sure. for sure. So what about the 5-year roadmap for Pinsight?
I don't know. I mean, I don't plan for 5 years for the prior company because the market is changing too fast. Yeah, but obviously we see ourselves as, I mean, I really admire Mistral and similar companies. So we see ourselves as companies similar to them. Right now we are, for example, I mentioned we have two open source models. One is document AI model. So a model that can take scan documents and images, etc., and can provide structured output as a result. That's the one that was much better than GPT-4 Vision. And we don't see GPT creating anytime soon a document AI model. I mean, JP Morgan is working on that. I don't know, Bloomberg is working on that, etc. But those are giants, but not AI giants.
Right.
So, and OpenAI or Microsoft, they're not working on that right now. So this is something that can stay competitive over time. So right now what we are doing, we are taking open source models that are already trained, like Mistral, and making them document AI models. Mm-hmm. So it's not just fine-tuning, but it is not really training from scratch as well. So it's kind of in the middle. And we think that the next step, if this becomes successful, once we open source, if we see we are getting community, will be to pre-train the model from scratch. So to kind of come up with a foundation model ourselves. And
For tabular data.
For tabular data and document, yes, document for these two data. Things. Because those are the two things that we were kind of advantages as a technology, and those are the ones that we want to invest in. So for Ananya, I mean, if you upload PDF in other products as well, you can chat with them because those are digital PDFs. For Ananya, if you upload images as well, you can still chat because it will extract information out of them. So we just took whatever we had in the product that kind of were more competitive in the market. For example, we had RAG system, retrieval augmented generation, etc. We just didn't pay attention to them because those are not competitive anymore. So we took whatever we had that was competitive, and we are thinking of open sourcing it. So in 5 years, we see ourselves as a major provider of open source foundation models. Hopefully, if we are successful, hopefully, if we are successful, one that keeps its promise and stays open source. Unfortunately, because many of the open source providers stopped being open source over time. So I don't know. Let's keep this on the record.
we'll hold you to it with this.
So, that's the idea.
Fantastic. I wish you a lot of luck with it, and I hope you'll come back and tell us how it went.
Sure. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Chan. I really enjoyed it.
Me too.